Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from ESPN Pittsburgh. Dave, it's Wednesday. It is Eagles week. The Steelers come in 1-2, obviously off the bye. The Eagles come in 3-1. We had the Mike Tomlin press conference yesterday. And, you know, we're getting better at reading the tea leaves. But generally, you have to think that the good news is everybody apparently practiced. And, of course, as we know, Wednesday and Thursday are now the big days, most particularly for James Harrison.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better. Thursday, really, really the key day with Harrison. He basically, Marcus Gilbert, the only guy who he said did not work on Monday. Of course, Marcus is recovering from that strained groin. And first off, let me say, when you go back and you watch that tape of the Raiders game, that guy really fought through that groin injury, man. That hurt my groin just watching him play in that game. But, yeah, Gilbert's the only guy listed on there. Looks good that Stevenson Sylvester will be back. I'm guessing Rashard Mendenhall as well, too. Looks good for Troy Polamalu. You know, the thing, though, with Harrison, though, that I still keep going back to was his agent saying that Harrison had a setback of some sorts last week. And that's the only thing that kind of sticks in my mind right now moving forward. And Wednesday, I expect James to practice today. If he does not go full today, though, are you kind of worried at that point, or would you be okay with him going limited today and then possibly full as long as he goes full on Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, I don't want to guess too much, but from what Tomlin said, I would expect him to go full, and then we'll see what happens. I think the good thing is we can probably discount what his agent said. I don't know that, again, nobody – you know, the thing about the bye week, the thing that's a little disappointing is Mike Tomlin for some reason feels he's not – doesn't have an obligation to talk to the media after a game where they have a bye week. I think it's unfortunate because we don't really get a good analysis of the Steelers' performance. We don't get to, these guys, they ask questions, but they don't want to sit there and it's wrong to say they're intimidated, but nobody wants to sit there and conduct the interview like it's a personal interview. It is a group interview and a guy doesn't want to ask 8 questions. And I'm sure each of those guys had more questions to ask. So the question about McClendon's playing time doesn't get asked. Some of the things about what you just said, maybe you don't want to bring up what Harrison's agent said because Tomlin's not going to comment on it. So you don't want to waste a question on things like that. So it's unfortunate we didn't get that from last Tuesday. What he said in the press conference, he seemed to suggest that all things were a go. And, I keep saying, of course he was wrong about Troy in the second week of the season. So how much do we actually know? Not a lot. But the good thing is it just doesn't look like it's anything more serious than the surgery that happened. And we're not going to know something different than that until we know something different than that. And that's why, just like you, I was unsettled by what his agent said. But I'm going to discount it for now. And if he gets through today's practice, then you have to think it's kind of all go going forward if he comes back and goes tomorrow.
You know, Tomlin gives a much better interview when he's on Sirius. He joins the guys on Sirius XM NFL Radio about 20 minutes after his press conference every week. And he's not the most forthcoming. Don't get me wrong that somebody's really missing pertinent info there in that interview, but he was pinned down to the point where they wanted him to give the status update on each player one by one, and of course Tomlin didn't bite on that, but he said all three worked yesterday, meaning Monday, with no limitations, and completed full work, and we anticipate those guys moving forward toward the weekend. Later on, he said he was asked particularly what leads into that decision as far as players who have missed time as it relates to when to cut them loose to return to action, and specifically how many snaps that they can play in the game upon their return. And he said, I think it's different per guy. I think that their level of conditioning, the position that they play, have a lot to do with it. Their ability to play at a high level on limited number of reps, because obviously injury has limited the reps with these guys. Really, that's how we're going to approach this going forward, really on a case-by-case basis. You know, James hasn't had, you know, limited reps is one thing. I can see with Polamalu and Mendenhall, you know, definitely possibly having limited reps. But let's face it, James Harrison, the reps that he's gotten, no matter what they are, haven't been a lot moving forward here. So, you know, let's look at this from a snap count perspective, David. Let's assume James Harrison does dress Sunday. What are you looking for out of him as far as snap counts go?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dave. That's a great question. I would think if they alternate series and kind of have him go like that, I would think 35 to 40 would be the upper limit of what I would expect. I guess for me, the question is, if he's good to go, I want him on the edge after Mike Vick in passing situations, containing that edge and coming off the corner. So I would be shuffling personnel more in trying to get him in those situations. I doubt necessarily that that's what the Steelers will do, because we know the Eagles like to pass as much as they do. And we'll have Zach Berman from Philly.com and the Philadelphia Inquirer with us here in about 15 minutes to preview the Eagles. So I'll be interested to see if they use him in a down situation or if in a series situation. But I would think, you know, 35 to, I would think 40 would be the kind of absolute max upper limit.
Is 75% of James Harrison better than 100% of Jason Worlds or Chris Carter in your mind?
I guess it depends what the limitation is. If it's 75% because it's a conditioning thing, hell yeah. Because then if it's just getting his wind back for a play three plays later, that's fine. If it's 75% because he can't get leverage on the edge, or, you know, he can't push off that knee, then probably not. Probably not. So I would, you know, like they talked about Rashard Mendenhall having to undergo a last knee strength test. I would think for Harrison, you know, he's going to have a similar thing. If the strength is in the knee, and then it just becomes a conditioning thing, hell yeah, give me James Harrison every time.
Hey, and people have been asking me this on Twitter and email as well, too. And we're just not, you know, it's a guessing game, because let's face it, James Harrison, nobody, I mean, you didn't get to see James take any snaps at training camp. Of course, he missed the preseason. We just don't know where this guy is at right now. And you would think that Tomlin wouldn't put him on the field if he thought he was going to be a detriment to the defense. So, you know, everybody that's listening, that's asking it, you know, hey, your eyes are going to be just as good as mine come Sunday if indeed he gets on the field for that game. I'm more excited about Troy probably coming back and making an impact in this game than I am James Harrison, and the same goes with Rashard as well, too. The people that are asking about Stevenson Sylvester, look, Stevenson Sylvester is not going to see snaps on defense unless there's an injury. This is a special teams addition, in my opinion here. I think you'll see, if both Harrison and Stevenson Sylvester suit up for this game Sunday, I think you'll see Adrian Robinson inactive. I think you'll see Al Woods inactive as a result. And with Troy Polamalu hopefully coming back to the lineup, I think you could see Robert Golden inactive for this game too. And I think, outside of maybe Beecham being back on the inactive list instead of Mike Adams, because it appears Mike Adams is over that back issue now, I think that's kind of what your inactive list is kind of looking like, assuming all those guys suit up. And if Mendenhall suits up, I think Jonathan Dwyer might be your odd man out there.
Yeah, so yeah, I agree with that. And we'll go through that again on Friday when we get a better sense of how the practices go. I'm with you. And so, you know, we assume, I guess the next question would be, Rashard Mendenhall, do you expect to see him used as a third down back, Dave, or do you expect him to get series again, come in and maybe get the second series or the fourth series or whatever it is?
I guess my best guess would be the way they kind of used him last year, along with the Mawaldi Moore, kind of the change of pace type thing, alternating series, I guess, would be my call. I think you leave Rashard in there for a series or two, and even on third down, because it limits the predictability, in my opinion. I think after he comes out, say, two series, you'll see Redmond in there on first and second down, and then possibly Baron Batch. And Chris Rainey kind of rotating in on the third down type situations would be my guess. I can't help but keep going back to what Todd Haley said a few Thursdays ago in his talk with the media, that they're going to be smart with Rashard upon his return. So, and let's face it, I mean, the Steelers, I don't know about you. I don't see the Steelers running the ball 30 times in this game unless they have a big lead on the Eagles in the fourth quarter, and we all could hope for that. I think you're talking about, 22 carries maybe at most here, split between three or four guys.
Yeah, Dave, I think that's right on Mendenhall. What I'll be interested to see is, coming out of the game Sunday, assuming he's healthy out of the game, how much more work he gets on Thursday night. Of course, short rest going down to Tennessee, but if he proves he's the effective back, I don't know that it matters all that much who starts right now. But I have to think that they're going to try to get him carries and work him back as quickly as possible, if everything we've heard about his knee and the visual sightings and the tests and everything have been what we've been told, and he goes through this game Sunday and looks effective. I think if he's effective, obviously it's going to be his job pretty quickly.
And Tom commented on Sirius yesterday as well, too, that he's cutting full speed, so – everything matches that this is going to be the week, barring something unforeseen and this strength test not going right with his knee. Anything now, how much is Mendenhall going to help? Hey, he's not going to hurt, right?
Right. Exactly.
Because let's face it, there have been a few gaffes. More than a few gaffes with the run blocking, but there have been gaffes on top of that. With the running back's decisions as well, too. I went back and looked at the successful failure play rates in the old formula that the book, The Hidden Game of Football, which if you can find a copy of that book, I mean, it's no longer in print. I highly advise people to try to find it on eBay or whatnot. It's a great book. But the old adage is that if you gain 40% of the yards needed on first down, it was a successful play. That number's been upped to about 45% now. Of course, a back can't, or a player can't gain 4.5 yards per carry. But it's just, some of the studies have shown that, deemed that a successful play. On second down, 60% of the yardage needed. And, of course, third and fourth down, 100% of the yardage needed. When you look at the running game, and it's, this is no this is no shocking discovery here. It just supports everything that we've seen though thus far. On first and second down, or on first down specifically, the Steelers only have a 23% run success rate on 40 first down runs. That's not good. On second down, on 27 runs, they have just a 26%. Run success. So, basically these guys are, as their yards per carry reflects this, it's just not been good running the ball on early downs. Now, the only saving grace here, and it's not, too terribly something to write home about, is that on fourth down, they have two successful runs on fourth down on the two tries, and they're 5 out of 9 on third down. So when you hear them talk about running the football when they have to, at least on third and fourth down, they've been able to do that. But they've got to figure out, and I wrote about this yesterday as well, too. I think, and we'll talk to Zach Berman here in a little bit about this as well, too. I think that their best chance to run into football against the Eagles is straight up the gut, because up the middle, the Eagles are allowing over 6 yards per carry on 20, almost nearly 30 carries so far this season. So You know, with that wide nine that the Eagles run, I think you want to test the running backs. I think you want to get Pouncey and Cologne off of their first blocks and out to the second level. And I think you want to try to bust a few of those runs up the gut. I think that's the only way you're going to be able to run on the Eagles defense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I think both teams are going to take a – both teams, look, they've shown that they are past first teams in the sense that they're going to pass 60% of the time. The stats are now bearing that out. We saw the Eagles stick with the running game in the second half against the Giants, and McCoy had a big half. But you know, both these teams know that generally their offense is going to be built around the passing game. Dave, it'll be interesting to see how much the Eagles do with that and how the Steelers counteract that run game.
Most definitely, because let's face it, McCoy, boy, that you go back to that one cut that he made in that Giants game, man. The kid is phenomenal. Now, as Tomlin said during his press conference yesterday, they know a lot about Shady McCoy, of course, because him being a pit boy and being right next door there. But knowing a lot about a kid and knowing how to stop a kid is two different things. And the linebackers the Steelers linebackers are really going to have their hands full in this game, because not only are you going to have to contain, you know, have run containment on the outside, you're going to have to spy, let's face it, Brent Celek is second on their team in receptions heading into this game, and his yards per catch is just phenomenal for a tight end through the first four games of the season as well, too. And then, like, hey, if that's not enough, you're going to have to make sure you do something to contain Vic in this pocket as well, too, because he showed specifically in the game against the Giants that he's not afraid to get up on the horse and get out of there, because the Eagles' offensive line was not great in that game. A lot of times Vic was bounced around and hit in that game. So there's a lot to chew on, and I'm with you. I think the Eagles are going to try to run the ball, get Troy Polamalu down in the box and try to take care, at that point, take advantage of some one-on-one matchups maybe outside. The Eagles' receiving core outside of Celek and DeSean Jackson, not very sexy. I know one of them, I think Avant, one of the two, I think Macklin's been banged up. And
yep.
And Jason Avant, really, nothing really to write home there. But, yeah, they're going to have their hands full with McCoy in this game. It'll be interesting to see. This is a type game, once again, where it's in the Steelers' advantage to jump on them quickly if they can. But the Eagles' defense is strong. If you make them one-dimensional, make Mike Vick try to have to pass all the time, that's when the turnovers happen, in my opinion, with him.
Yeah, Dave, anything else we want to get to before we do our Eagles insider interview with Zach Berman of Philly.com?
Yeah, real quick, did you catch the Mendenhall piece on Huffington Post? And do you think was he trying to tie that into his Twitter thoughts, do you think, from the Bin Laden thing?
It just now makes me think that maybe it was a little bit of a more fully explained position that was far enough away that it can be tied or not tied. I thought it was actually a reasonably thoughtful piece, but I didn't really understand, why they published it other than he's a football player. I mean, big deal.
Yeah, I think the only thing he said right in that article was to the fact that what was his words. We live in a very self-focused, self-promotional, and narcissistic culture. He certainly had that part right. So with that being a self-promotional comment and self-focus, it's time for us to remind you to please follow Steelers Depot.
That's funny.
Please follow Steelers Depot on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. My mailbox was full in my Steelers Depot account, so if you tried to send me an email there and it got bounced for some reason, shame on me. I updated my quota to allow quite a bit of spam now. So do that. Listen to David's show. David, I'm on with you today.
3:15 today. 970 ESPN.
On 970 ESPN. So please make sure to look out for that as well, too. And, you know, the Wednesday injury report, of course, will be out today. We'll have all that info out as soon as it's released as well, too. So make sure you're following us. We are very self-focused, self-promotional, and narcissistic people here on the Terrible Podcast.
All right. Without further ado, Zach Berman, Dave, and myself, get after it with our Eagles preview. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. We're pleased to have as our guest Zach Berman of the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philly.com. Zach, you can follow on Twitter at ZBERM. Zach, thanks for joining us here on the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.
Glad to be on.
Hey, Zach, let's start big picture stuff. With the Eagles, there are a lot of people who look at the Eagles, and I heard a national guy talking yesterday and saying, it's an Eagles team, it's 3-1, but they're skating on thin ice. His perception was that the Eagles weren't a very good team. I kind of come at it completely different direction. 12 turnovers through the first three games. They managed to win two of those. They took care of business against a tough divisional foe in the New York Giants on Sunday night. I look at them as one of the five best teams in the league. Obviously, if you turn the ball over a lot, you're going to have trouble. But if you don't, I think this team has a ton of talent. What's the perception in Philadelphia, and what's your perception?
It's a great question, and it's one that you won't find a consensus on because it really isn't the eye of the beholder. There's two perspectives. You can say what you saw in those first three games, in particular with the turnovers and sloppy play, if that's who the Eagles are, then they're very fortunate to be sitting here at 3-1, and their prospects aren't very good for the season. If you look at the alternative view, which is that that wasn't an indication of who they are, Michael Vick didn't play in the preseason and was very rusty, and that they're going to get over, that they're going to get better throughout the season, as Andy Reid teams are wont to do, then you say, wow, 3-1 is a very good place to be sitting right now. And you know, just think about this. If you think about it this way, last year at this time they were 1-3. They go on to finish 8-8. They go 4-0 in their final four games. The good start in theory could help propel the Eagles later in the season. We'll see over time, and this week will be a big indication of just how good the team is, and in particular Michael Vick, because I'm not breaking news here. A team's only going to be as good as their quarterback in this current day in the NFL. And Michael Vick is relied upon so much in the Eagles offense that if he plays the way he did against the Giants, which is play intelligently, win the turnovers, take care of the ball, don't take as many foolish risks, then the Eagles could be a very good offense.
You talked about last year, and then we talked about the start with the turnovers. Andy Reid seemingly opened the door a little bit to a quarterback controversy before the Giants game when asked if Vic would remain his starting quarterback. I was surprised. I was surprised, A, because so early in the season and still winning games, and B, because the alternatives behind Vic aren't exactly experienced NFL guys. What's the reaction been to that?
Well, you look at that statement, and he said Michael's our quarterback for now. He backpedaled later that day, and he specifically corrected it 2 days later when he said it was a semantical misinterpretation, basically, that Michael Vick's the quarterback. I'm of the opinion that a coach who's been a coach for 14 years, like Andy Reid has, knows exactly what he's saying and knows exactly why he's saying it. I'm sure just the way Mike Tomlin is, too. Good coaches know what questions are coming, and they know how they want to answer a question and how to word the answer. So I don't think it was a situation where Michael Vick was in peril of losing his job, or at least in the short term. I think it was a situation where they wanted to get he wanted to get the message through to Vick very clearly that you got to play better, that you can't be so reckless with the ball. And that's because that's what it was in those first three games. There were interceptions that were just inexplicable. There were fumbles that did not need to happen. So there was a very clear difference in the way Michael Vick played on Sunday night against the Giants compared to the first three games. you look at that and you say maybe the message was heard. You look at that and you say maybe, you know, the Philadelphia media overreacted to it. There's a few different ways you can go, but I don't think it was ever a situation where Nick Foles was going to be starting in Pittsburgh based on performance. I think it was more, hey, Mike, you need to improve as we go on here.
When you look at their offense, it seemed against the Giants the other night, they didn't run the ball well at all in the first half, but we saw Andy Reid stick to the running game there in the second half, and I think it really, really paid off for him. How surprising was that, in your opinion, Zach, and was that the difference in the game for the Eagles to ultimately win that game?
Well, it went against what we've heard from the Eagles and what they normally do. I mean, usually what we've seen is if the running game's not working early, then they're going to abandon the running game. The fact that they stuck to it was a huge factor in the win. I don't know if it was the reason. I actually think the way the defense played was a big factor in the big taking care of the ball. But LeSean McCoy, I don't need to offer you his superlatives. Everyone in Pittsburgh saw him play in college. He's one of the more dynamic running backs in the NFL. And the thing about McCoy, and this is what the Eagles haven't capitalized on yet, and they started doing it more in Sunday night's game, is that he's a big play back in the sense that he might get 2 yards, 1 yard, 2 yards, then that next carry is going to be 30 yards. Next carry is going to be 35 yards. I mean, that's what happened in the first drive of the second half against the Giants, is that he busted two long runs to get down to the 1 yard line, and that was the drive. So I think by them sticking to the run, maybe they can take something from it. But ideally, and I hope this isn't getting kind of too into the X's and O's, but the ratio that the Eagles want, offensive coordinator Marty Morton Way, Coach Andy Reid, but what they want is 60-40, maybe even 65-35, depending on the game. When they talk about balance, they're not talking about a 50-50 split. The Eagles will never be a 50-50 team. Instead, what they want is they want balance in terms of the rhythm. They want to have the offense in a flow, and the running game is obviously a big factor into that. So it looked good on Sunday night, and I know that the Steelers' running stats, or I should say run defense stats, aren't that great right now, but obviously they have defensive players coming back. But I do think the Eagles will involve the run a little more on Sunday and in certain matchups that they think they can do well.
I know the Eagles are fairly healthy overall coming out of the game against the Giants. King Dunlap, will they get him back this week over Demetrius Bell over there at the left tackle spot, or is King Dunlap still a week away, and they might not have much to worry about unless James Harrison returns for this game and is anywhere close to the old James Harrison, because the Steelers have failed to rush the passer from their own right side through the first three games of the season.
In terms of Dunlap, that's been a huge question today. We're talking on a Wednesday morning. I am actually on my way to the facility as we speak, and King Dunlap's expected to practice today. In terms of him getting his starting job back, that's a different question, because Andy Reid wants to see how he looks, how he returns. He had that hamstring injury. He's a big guy. You know, he's 6'9", so you really need to see the way he moves. And that's a big if for him. But Demetrius Bell, who interestingly enough, was signed to be the starting left tackle when Jason Peters got hurt during the offseason, lost his job during training camp. Demetrius Bell has not looked that good, and particularly in his one road game in Arizona. I know Arizona has a dome, but I imagine it's going to be just as loud in Heinz Field on Sunday. So that's a big concern for your left tackle. I think if Dunlap's healthy, I think he'll get back in there. But either way, I don't think the Eagles' left tackle situation is overwhelming. Now, you say the Steelers' pass rushes, but it's also a big factor in the Eagles' running game. if you go back and watch the Eagles film, a lot of their big runs were to the right side. Last season it was to the left side because Jason Peters is one of the best left tackles in the NFL. So the way the left tackle is playing has a big effect on the run game as well.
We're talking with Zach Berman of Philly.com, and you can follow Zach on Twitter at Zberm, B-E-R-M. Zach, tell us a little bit more about the line, because, you know, we look at the skill position and we know they've got very good receivers in Macklin and Jackson, and Celek's off to a very good start. Tell us a little bit about the line, and then what kind of schemes we expect to see offensively. Will it be mostly three wide personnel with a back and a tight end, what we call 11 personnel, or what would we expect to see?
Yeah, well, in terms of the line, in terms of the personnel on it, you see Todd Harriman and Danny Watkins on the right side. As we just discussed, the left tackle's in a bit of flux right now. And then you see Evan Mathis at left guard, and Dallas Reynolds at the center. Now, they had Jason Kelce, who was really one of the top young centers in the NFL. I don't think that's an overstatement. And he tore his ACL. Or towards MCL, and that was 2 weeks ago, and he's out of the lineup now, out for the season. And Dallas Reynolds is a big unknown. Spent 3 years in the practice squad, and the Eagles never felt to call him off, and now he's your starting center. So that's an area of weakness, and I think it's more of an issue against the 3-4 team because you have the nose lining up right over top him. In terms of the offensive personnel, the Eagles have a lot of different formations. I think one look you will see a lot is the three wide, one tight single back. But Stanley Abili, their fullback, played very well last week and was a big help in the running game. And they also like to use two tights sometimes, and that's with Clay Harbor as the second tight end. A lot of it's based on matchup and down and distance, but that's something to watch as well.
Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, Zach. Of course, the Eagles like to use that wide nine look, and they oftentimes will dare you to run the ball against that seven-man front. Sometimes they'll have a safety down low there. But one thing I noticed that stuck out is that they have given up over 6 yards per carry right up the middle. Is this, and trust me, the Steelers' run game has been nothing to write home about through the first 3 games. Is this where the Steelers need to attack the Eagles because of the tremendous play of the outside linebackers and the way those defensive ends line up wide? Should the Steelers try to attack the Eagles up the middle?
Yeah, I would say so. If you're looking at it, you know, the Eagles, they still have uncertainty there. Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sorry about
that.
I got you.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, the Eagles, if you're talking about the Eagles' defense, they don't have big defensive tackles. They have the way they're built in Jim Washburn's system. And Jim Washburn's the defensive line coach, is they have the 290-pound, 300-pound defensive tackle. They don't have the 330-pound run-stuffing D tackle. So that could be one thing, and they have played that wide nine formation. Now, the big player to watch on the Eagles' defensive line is rookie Fletcher Cox. Fletcher Cox is their first-round pick, and he's made such a difference in their run defense right now.
How much nickel versus dime have you seen them play when they get into their sub package? And Brandon Boykin looks like he looked like he had a little bit of problems the other night. Of course, the Eagles like to run that press man and a little bit of man off. It seems specifically against the Giants as well as a few other games that I've seen. But can you talk about the play of the secondary and the scheme so far through the first 4 games?
They do play a lot of nickel. And, again, a lot of that's based on what you see from what the opponent's showing. But they have a lot of confidence in Brandon Boykin, the rookie, as you mentioned, fourth-round pick out of Georgia. And he plays exclusively on the inside. So the Eagles have two very good outside cornerbacks, Dominique Rodgers-Kamara, who's probably been their best cornerback in what he's played, and Nnamdi Asamoah, whose reputation precedes him. So, but those guys are outside guys. They use the sideline to their advantage. And you look at Roger Smart, he has terrific ball skills. Nnamdi, you know, you can say he's lost a step. He's not a speed guy, but he's one of the bigger corners you'll see. But you see a lot of nickel from the Eagles, and one of the big things in the way they play nickel is the way their two linebackers are played, D'Amico Ryans and Michael Kendricks, who both have been three-down linebackers this season, and both have really been terrific, especially playing in the nickel. Kendricks been able to defend tight ends, which would surprise you because he's only about 5'11", but he's done well there. So I think that's what you see schematically from the Eagles. But again, a lot's based on what the opposing offense shows, and they have a lot of different sub packages for different situations. And I should say too that the Eagles have 9 defensive linemen that they all play, and they all play quite a bit. They rotate. So in pass rushing situations, you might see Jason Babin, Trent Cole. You might see Phil Hunt, Darrell Taft. You see Brandon Graham in there. You see many different combinations.
I'm going to jump ahead of David real quick here on this one because you mentioned the rotational group up front. Mike Tomlin talked about this on Tuesday during his press conference as well, too. Is this a situation Steelers like to run that no-huddle offense and have had some good success with it through the first three games? Would it be advisable for them to jump in that no-huddle early and try to prevent some of that rotational substitution against the Eagles and try to wear out a certain group of theirs on the field and not allow them off the field?
I thought that 3 weeks ago, and then I saw the Ravens game when the Ravens played a lot of no huddle, and it really didn't have an effect. Because, A, the Eagles often change based on series, okay? And B, every time there's an incomplete pass or a player goes out of bounds, you can sub then. It really wasn't an issue against the Ravens, and the Ravens have been very successful using that no huddle this season. So my answer would be no. In theory, it would be yes, but when I saw it in practice, it showed me that it's more of an issue when we in the media discuss it than what it actually happened.
Hey, Zach, and continuing on that, you know, some of the times we talk about these things, and when guys get rotated out, they want more playing time. When you've got established guys like Babin and Cole on the outside, is there any, for lack of a better word, is there any jealousy about playing time, or is everybody good?
No, everyone's very good. Particularly Jason Babin signed here knowing he followed Jim Washburn up here. Jim Washburn left Tennessee, came here. Knowing the wide nine, knowing the way it does it, and it keeps them fresh. And every defensive end you'll talk to knows you get paid based on sacks, right?
Yeah.
And the way you stay fresh and you have a better chance of rushing the quarterback if you're fresher than the opposing offensive lineman. So it's kind of built to them in that regard. Everyone plays. Everyone gets a chance to get after the quarterback. And I think it's much more of an issue, guys, for the backups, because Brandon Graham was a first-round pick, a high first-round pick, too. He's a guy who on other teams might be taking 40 snaps, and on the Eagles he's taking 15 snaps. So I think you see it more of an issue for guys like that and Phillip Hunt, who had a terrific preseason. Anyone who watched that Eagles-Steelers game in the preseason saw Phillip Hunt, former Canadian Football League player. So for those guys, they don't get as many snaps as they would on other teams, but everyone in that defensive line meeting room understands the way Jim Washburn does it, and it's the kind of thing you know going into it what the expectations are.
Has the safety play been up to par in your eyes? We noticed, especially against a game against the Giants the other night, they sure were deked on a couple of play action plays late in the game where they had no business probably even trying to respect the run. At that point there, and of course they gave up a couple of the big plays which allowed the Giants to kind of drive the field and get in a position to win that game. But on the flip side, we noticed that, you know, with the man press coverage, they oftentimes will actually cheat a safety down to kind of help with the run there. So what's your thoughts on the safety play of Nate Allen and Kurt Coleman so far through the first four games?
I don't think they've been exemplary, but I think they've been better than what they were last season. Now, that may not be saying much, but, Nate Allen's playing better. I think Nate Allen's playing good football. Kurt Coleman, he's the one who's been on some of those play actions. He's a marginal player. I mean, he's not a star. He's a solid player, big hitter, has decent ball skills, but he's not, you know, if you're writing your list of top safeties in the NFL, you're never thinking about Kurt Coleman. So he's a marginal player, and he does fit that profile of a player who's been beat this year. Nate Allen, I actually think, has been having a good year. But, no, their safeties certainly are not the strength of their defense. And, frankly, it's been an issue in Philadelphia ever since Brian Dawkins left.
Their defensive scheme's pretty upfront and simple. They're betting they're going to get to the quarterback before your receivers can break free of the coverage outside there. With that being said, how have teams done with short, quick passing game in the first four games against the defense?
Well, they've had to do it, and that's a very good question, because if you look at the Eagles' sack totals this year, they're not overwhelming. I mean, last year they were top of the league. This year they're not overwhelming, but you see the way quarterbacks are playing against them. Quarterbacks aren't holding the ball long. In some cases, Arizona beat them that way. Kevin Cobb got rid of the ball very quickly. In Cleveland, Brandon Weeden's had a tough go that game. He got rid of the ball very quickly. Even Flacco got rid of the ball quickly. So, teams have had some success with it. I think one thing that the teams have done well, and it's hard to build because these two receivers I mentioned near the top of the league, but Larry Fitzgerald and Victor Cruz, they both lined up in the slot and were able to get the ball quicker and kind of get mismatches that way. And so those two guys come to mind as players who did particularly well taking advantage of that. But otherwise, the Eagles' defense has been fairly stout this year. The Arizona game was an exception. But they played well. They played great against Cleveland. They played well against Baltimore, and Baltimore's been very good. And they even played well against the Giants. Eli Manning didn't kill them. So I don't think – I think if you're going to beat the Eagles, and the Steelers have a very good chance of doing such, it's not going to be, with 35 points. I think it's going to be by getting to Michael Vick and hurting the Eagles that way.
Zach, just closing up on special teams. Obviously, Alex Henry's been great since drafted from Nebraska, but made a change at punter. Even though the statistics look good, I guess they weren't thrilled with directional punting and hang time.
Well, they just want more consistency, and Matt McGuire is a two-time Pro Bowler. He was in camp with them, wasn't fully healthy in camp. But I just think they wanted to know that going down you look at the corridor of the season, so to speak, what you're going to get more from McGuire than with Chaz Henry. There's just less variable involved with a veteran who's been two Pro Bowlers and a second-year player who's still trying to figure out his way. But when you're talking about special teams, the big thing to watch, guys, is Eagles kick coverage. They've been very poor this season. Second worst in the NFL. The only team worse than them is the Detroit Lions, and all you need to do is watch a Lions game to see the trouble they've had stopping kickoffs. So that's a big issue, and it's one that the Eagles are really trying to correct. They cut Brian Roll yesterday. Brian Roll was a starter for them last season, lost his job, but the decision was motivated by special teams. They need to get better on special teams. They didn't have Colt Anderson. He's probably their best special teams player. With him being back, that will help, but the Eagles' kickoff coverage is not good, and it's an area that the Steelers could possibly exploit.
Zach, can we get a prediction from you before we cut you loose here?
Well, if I had a prediction I was utterly confident with, I'd go to Vegas instead of being at the facility. in all seriousness, I actually think this is a game that I like for the Steelers. I say that for the fact that, obviously, the Steelers are a real good football team. Coming off a bye, playing at home, they're going to be much healthier. Now, you guys know the Steelers considerably better than me, but, I've written some Steelers stuff in the past, and I remember doing a story before the AFC Championship game against the Jets a few years ago, specifically looking at the effect that Troy Polamalu has on the lineup and what they do when Polamalu's playing compared to what they do when Polamalu isn't. And you guys can tell me, it sounds like Polamalu's going to play this weekend.
That's the way Tomlin makes it seem, most definitely. He practiced fully on Monday, and we'll see Wednesday and Thursday, of course, are the key days with him and Harrison, but the sign is pointing in that direction.
Exactly, and I think that makes such a difference, against both the run and the pass. I mean, he's one of the few difference makers at safety in the NFL, even still, so. I think with him in the lineup, that helps. And I just think the matchup, Eagles coming off an emotional win, going on the road, Steelers coming off a bye week, having time to be fresh, having time to be ready. I think this is a match, and the Steelers traditionally have been a tough matchup for the Eagles, too, in the Andy Reid era. So I would say that the Steelers, I give the Steelers the edge, but I don't think this is the type of game that anyone's going to put their house on.
Yeah, I'm with you. Zach, that's great stuff. Really appreciate your time and really appreciate all the good insight.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
All right, that's Zach Berman from Philly.com and Philadelphia Inquirer. And make sure you're following Zach on Twitter to get all the latest on what the Eagles are up to this week. That's at Z Berm. Dave, good stuff there from Zach Berman. First time we've had him on the show. Really nice insight. We'll have to have him back on again as well. And to you, thanks for listening, as always, to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.